Good morning and welcome to HR Tech Weekly with Stacey Harris and John Sumter. This is our show 112. Stacey, how are you?
I'm doing well today. Now the technology's working. I'm in Ohio where it's snowing. I haven't seen snow in ages, but I'm used to it. My hometown here in Cleveland and enjoying the crisp, clear weather of snow and gray skies. How about you? Where are you at today?
I am in Boston, down on the wharf in the waterfront, in the north end, where the Italian restaurants are amazing and the seafood is fresh. I didn't have fish for breakfast today.
You didn't have fish for breakfast today, huh? Well, yes. I was going to say we went downtown to Cleveland, had a good dinner last night. So it's amazing how much the Cleveland scene has improved their food opportunities since I have left about 7 years ago. So,
that's great to hear. Cleveland is modernizing. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah. So, what takes you to Cleveland?
I'm doing a lunch and learn on HR technology here in the area. Just a small event that Pierre Cedar is putting on. But I will also be visiting family. So, and you're in Boston, I think, working with clients, right?
I'm in Boston, working with a client. So what's in the mailbag? What are we learning about today?
Well, there's a lot going on, and not just across the news in general, but in the HR tech space. We've got a lot of interesting things to cover this morning. For those who are in the sort of know on talent management, there is an interesting acquisition that took place or was announced at least last week, just after we had done last week's radio show. So Saba Software announced agreement to acquire Halogen Software. So that's some interesting conversation on there. But what that's going to look like, and is this the start of something, of the smaller talent management solutions starting to sort of work together to address some of the challenges they're facing in the market? There is an update. SAP put out their quarter one report update with some new announcements on product release, which is some interesting, I think, new focuses for them. There's also a huge amount of conversation right now on cybersecurity and multiple areas there. Marissa Mayer had to give up some of her recent bonuses because of the breaches at Yahoo. We've got some stuff going on at Dropbox. We've got stuff going on as far as labor market and shortfalls in cybersecurity space. So lots of conversation there. And then there is obviously some updates happening on the Uber conversation that we started last week, John. So really talk a little bit about what's going on with their sexual harassment investigation, their CEO's strategy and plans now for improving some of his leadership skills. And then obviously we can't not talk about what happened with Amazon yesterday. We might want to start with that conversation. I think that impacted almost everybody who was at least in some sense, using the AWS services for Amazon. And then some really great data from the labor market about job openings and people looking for work right now. So lots of new stuff going on in this space today. Do you want to talk a little bit about the Amazon piece? Because you were directly impacted by this. I was traveling all day while this was happening, so I didn't hear about it until I got off the plane. But how about you? Did this have an impact on you with going on the Amazon?
So it was wild. It was completely wild. Everybody around me is swearing at their computers. everybody is swearing at their computers. All sorts of things didn't work. My Salesforce integrations failed completely. So and it wasn't just that they weren't available. It's that they behaved in random fashions. It was worse than a brownout, sort of. It was some things just weren't available online, but a lot of the functionality that I depend on for my job did stupid stuff. It named files badly. It opened the wrong file. It was as if somebody was giving electroshock therapy to my key elements of software, and they're all in the cloud. And so it was it was unpleasant. And you know how it is with digital technology. My instinct is always to blame myself and my equipment. So,
yep.
So I spent an hour cursing at my stupid laptop. And then and then I started getting the insight that it was the Amazon cloud being down on the East Coast. I think it was mostly in the Northeast.
Northeast, yeah.
But you might not have been affected in North Carolina because there's a pretty intense Google stack somewhere near you in Research Triangle, I think. But anyhow, what this makes you realize is that everybody who is moved into the cloud is vulnerable in a way that everybody poo-pooed as we were getting here today, right? And so. What do you suppose they're thinking at Workday now that Workday has made this big commitment to go towards Amazon? And really, what do you think they think everywhere? Because the cloud is the destination, and guess what? Cloud systems fail.
They do. And I think this is very similar. It makes the case, I think, on some level, more so than I think in the past. That this is a utility much like the electricity grid or anything else that we have, right? Because I think it would be less than I think we're not going to go backwards. I mean keeping your own servers are just as bad. Those pipelines go down just as much, right? I don't think that's going to be the answer to much of this, right? Is going back. I think the question is going to be making sure that the vendors who are providing the services have some requirements for how often things can go down, just like you have from the vendors who provide the applications that they're running on them. I mean, Amazon had on their S3 is used by around 148,213 websites, 121,000 unique domains, right? That's crazy. That's about 8% of the top 1 million websites, which are actually used, that service. That's a lot when you think about people's businesses on an everyday basis.
Right. That's not 10% of it all. That's some of the biggest.
Yeah.
Right. It's not the bottom 100,000 and the top million who are on the Amazon cloud. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that it does put things into a different context. And as we're seeing more and more about the security risks, this is an area where we're probably going to have a lot more conversations. If the web goes down, if things get hacked, if things get challenged, who's held responsible for it, right? Is it just the financial market will take care of it? Because if I lose money, I'm not going to want it to happen. Or will it have to be something that's regulated to keep it from impacting, people who are using the tools every day? I thought the more interesting thing about the story was that Amazon Web Services page that said they were sort of where their sort of level of up and down was also a web tool. And so it kept showing green while everything was red. So that was the big thing
great.
On Twitter was. Yeah.
That's great. We're having some trouble with Blog Talk Radio, and it's kind of the same thing where because the provider is doing what the provider does. Are you there?
I'm there. Yep.
Oh, I was just hearing heavenly angel harps from somewhere. And
I know that. I think that was my computer. That's what I was trying to fix. Yep. Again, the computer's doing things it's not supposed to do.
Right. And so we were talking about New Orleans getting ready for the show. Yeah. It's like New Orleans moved online.
Exactly.
And all of the ghosts are out scaring people now.
Yeah.
So the computer ghost. I don't know what you do in this new cloud world, because I imagine that when people make the decision to go to the cloud, one of the things that they do is they eliminate all of the in-house infrastructure that allowed them to be on-premise and have backup systems. And this suggests that it might be a good idea to have a backup system.
Or some level for the most critical, right? For the things that you have, and you see this in learning. I'm hearing this a lot more. Sort of the offline content, right? Whatever that might be, or whatever that might need to be. you know, what is the offline component of any solution that you have, any application that you have? You know, the mobile technology has been a part of that conversation because you're not always connected on your mobile tool. And I think this is another part of it, which is, you know, systems will go down, whether it's yours in-house on-premise or whether it's, you know, Amazon, there, you know, we can't expect everything to work 100% all the time. We'd like to, and maybe if you have multiple redundancies, you can. But, you know, the question becomes, what do you need to have available, and how do you get notified when it does go down is the other question, I think, too. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. What is the interesting thing? I believe you're right. You can't expect everything to work all the time, but I bet you that was the sales pitch about the cloud. That it works all the time and that it has, you know, these extraordinarily high availability rates. I've seen 99.95% availability pitched. One day of interrupted service calculated properly makes it impossible to hit 99.95% availability for years.
I agree. Yeah. Well, speaking of the big software, you know, cloud guys, one of the first to get into the cloud space was the talent management vendors, right? They were Cornerstone On Demand was one of the first to move in the cloud with the pitch that, hey, we can make this safer and more available and accessible 24/7. And then quickly following that, you saw that organizations who had on-premise environments shifted their environments to the cloud, and one of them was Saba Software, as well as Halogen Software, both purely talent management plays. Saba Software started out in the learning space, and Halogen started out in the performance management space, both sort of then bleeding into each other's area. Halogen offered a little bit of development, and Saba created some performance management tools and some recruiting tools along the way. I think both have basically, if you look at their data and their numbers, have solidly stayed in their wheelhouses as far as adoption levels go. The people mostly know them for their learning or their performance management. But Saba Software has, they're owned by a venture capital group, and that venture capital group and Saba has made the decision to acquire Halogen. Halogen is a public organization, so this is a statement. They sort of have to go through all of the, I think, the details about that. They're expecting that that will be closed by second quarter of 2017, so moving fairly quickly. And they're going to basically combine serving 4,000 customers, 33 million users, and with revenues exceeding $200 million annually. The deal was in the range of I don't have actually the number here on the deal. It was in, but it was not nearly as large as what we saw with the large acquisitions of Taleo or SuccessFactors by the ERPs, but definitely in a big enough range, I think, that it's the market's paying attention to it. John, does this surprise you that we're starting to see consolidation of the talent management space again?
Well, I have great friends at both Saba and Halogen, and I like the companies a lot, but they've both fallen behind. And my guess is that a move like this is precipitated by having trouble building revenue, right? So because they're both private, you don't really get a clear picture of year-over-year revenue growth. But they haven't been able to, or interested in, or willing to, or whatever the language is, to invest heavily in staying current with their technology over the last 3 or 4 years. And so that's a lifetime. And by banding together, they probably can consolidate some costs and prioritize development and start moving forward again. So that's how I would read this. The fact that the deal is not valued at a significant multiple is troubling pressure for the big people in the space, right? If this wasn't valued at 5 to 7 to 10 times revenue, if it wasn't $500 million deal, say, then that's got investment implications for the rest of the enterprise players. And we'll see how that shakes out over the next couple of weeks. But I'd like to see Saba and Halogen because they are sort of innovators in their management. I think both of them. They have tried amazing things. It's just that the market isn't very kind about the unrealized potential, even though pundits like us say experimentation and failure is the great thing. The market doesn't reward failure.
Yeah, the market unfortunately is very, very tough on that. And I'm sort of with you. I mean, over the last few years, Halogen has definitely had really good ratings on the Sarah Cedar user experience scores. But I think, like any of them, you know, they offer a piece of the puzzle, and so this will allow them to have sort of a connection to another piece of the puzzle. And I think together, these two things could be, as you said, the opportunity for them to really invest in the technology along with the features and functions. Because I do think that they've looked at things uniquely. Both organizations have looked at the talent management conversation in a more unique fashion than what we see from a lot of the large organizations or even from the traditional talent management organizations who have done much better in this space right now. So it's a space to watch. The other thing I thought that was sort of interesting to know was that the chief executive or CEO of not the CEO of Halogen, but the Michael Slonoy, Halogen's co-founder, who's executive chairman, I should say, he will become the chairman of the combined company and will be one of the largest independent shareholders. And that I think is sort of interesting because that means that you're getting some of the Halogen leadership, which is, I think, a pretty strong leadership group, infused into the Saba environment, which is definitely much more of a Silicon Valley sort of model of leadership.
I'm anxious to see how this works. I imagine they'll be shaking it out for a while. We'll know more about what's really happening here in the fall.
Yeah. Beyond sort of what's happening there, SAP also did their first quarter update. You know, they're saying their numbers now for their Employee Central are up to 1,580. So, you know, we've got this sort of arms race going on between all the three big ERP vendors who have a HCM component to what they're doing, and SAP released their most recent numbers is a good way to put that. But they did do an update for the analysts yesterday on sort of what all, you know, is going into their sort of next quarter releases and in this quarter release. And I think the most interesting thing about what they stated and what we heard from them is that it seems like they're focusing an awful lot of investment on connecting things. And I thought that was sort of an interesting, you know, place. So, for example, they've got now a learning marketplace, which is sort of connecting e-commerce, customer service, LMS, right, which is really playing on some of what their LMS that they had in place, the Plateau solution, some of its strengths. They've got an integrator connector for their workforce analytics tool. They mentioned a new focus on their HR portal. So the theme of the update was definitely integration and connection. That's a message I'm definitely hearing across the market. You know, are we going to be an organization that is open to a lot of different solutions, and so we're going to create places and ways for you to connect everything together, or are we going to be an organic house that's going to sort of grow individually and our tools will be sort of, you know, the best option at the end of the day? You know, we've heard this conversation for a long time in the market, but it definitely seems that we're starting to see the big ERPs take sides more than they have previously on this. Do you think that's going to become an issue, or do you think that we're just going to kind of see that pendulum swing back and forth as these organizations build out their new technologies?
I think it's just a pendulum swing. I don't see anything very interesting happening here. I think that it's I'm not sure why SAP is plotting right now, but SAP is plotting right now, and when they plot, they fall behind. Right? It's like the internal pendulum swing in SAP is they get excited about new things and then they don't. Right? They innovate and then they regiment, and they do that in narrow cycles, and so you don't see a lot of Oracle is much faster at market adaptation than SAP seems to be these days. Maybe that'll change, but that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of it comes down to the kind of clients these organizations are definitely working with. You know, there's no doubt that the sort of international clients, the more European and large global complex organizations that SAP is dealing with, they're not organizations that deal with new innovation very quickly, very fast, right? So they've got, I think, a business case to make in some cases for being a bit slower in some of the innovations, because they really have to think about how all this plays out for the very large global organizations. And, you know, and because in many cases, they're also dealing with a lot of data privacy and security issues that some organizations don't have to deal with in the smaller range and mid-market space. So, you know, there was a big study that just came out about cybersecurity skills, and that the expected gap is supposed to widen between people who have, you know, that we need for cybersecurity skills to manage all the cybersecurity issues we're going to have in the market to 1.8 million worker shortfall by 2022. I mean, that's the biggest shortfall of overall workers I've heard since people talked about, like, I don't know, COBOL programmers and, you know, before 2000, right? You know, this is seems to be the next big place where we're going to have all kinds of people trying to invest in education and, you know, training and programs. Is this, you know, is this as scary as it sounds, John? You've been doing a lot in cybersecurity, or do you think we've got room here to create a runway to develop the skill sets we need for it?
You know, but this is a tricky issue to talk about in today's political environment, because we do have major talent shortages. We have major, major talent shortages. Cybersecurity will be a pain point, but we have major talent shortages in the technical arenas all over the place. And it's going to have all sorts of consequence. If cybersecurity is the issue and we've got a fickle infrastructure, so the cloud is off and on and off and on, part of the question that nobody understands is what's security like when the cloud is behaving erratically, right? All of the models of cybersecurity assume that the software is functioning smoothly. And what we learned this week is when the cloud is having a brownout, when Amazon is trying to get back up online, things work in crazy ways, and the security problems are not understood at all. We don't have a clear picture of what happens in security there. And there are even more complicated things here. I spent some time last week talking with a company that does enterprise level protection against ransomware. And their issue is, you can't tell whether the security companies are good guys or bad guys, right? So even just if you were to hire out the security problem and solve the talent shortage by subcontracting, you don't really have any way of knowing whether or not the security service that's about to help you is actually going to be the way that ransomware gets installed on your machines.
Wow, that's just scary. I guess that's why 46% of companies are saying that it's already causing a significant impact on customers and leading to increased security breaches across the board, is this lack of skills and talent, because exactly what you're saying, you don't know who to hire and where to hire and where to get up from, right?
Wow. Yeah. So just to be modestly political for a moment, you'd think that money that we might spend building a way to keep workers away might be better spent on training programs.
Well, and I mean, just sort of not to stay out of the political realm here, but I do think that it, you know, at the same time that we're talking about this, there was a U.S. jobs claim report that said that we were at a 4-week average. The 4-week average was the lowest since 1973 for jobless claims. I mean, people who are unemployed making jobless claims, making, you know, requests for unemployment, you know, services, was lower than it has been since 1973 on a 4-week average. I was born in 1973, John. That's kind of crazy.
Right. Well. So the economy has been slowly and patiently built. You know, we had that tremendous, tremendous interruption before 2010, and we have recovered slowly and patiently, and now it's a very robust economy. That the biggest risk here is that somebody screws it up, and. This is better. So things were amazing in 1999 and 2000 when the unemployment rate was low and jobless claims were low, and this is better than that. And it just doesn't quite feel like it yet. But these are the good old days.
The problem, I think, and this is and you know, it'll be interesting because I'm home for the weekend, as I said. You know, problem is that this sort of uptick is that it hasn't gone everywhere. And I don't know about the 90s per se, if that was at least in the United States, it hasn't gone everywhere. And globally, I think we've got the same issue in some sense, depending on which regions you talk to, that yes, we've had an uptick in a lot of areas, but not in all areas. And maybe some areas upticked a lot and some haven't. And that's the overall, you know, issue. You know, it's interesting. There was a big article this week about Unilever's CEO taking like a 20% cut in his bonus and CEO packages, just because they were trying to figure out how to basically adjust better for the rest of the talent in the organization. You know, we saw this article about Marissa Mayer saying that she's, you know, going to have to give up her 2016, 2017 bonuses because of her security breaches. And basically that's because she had a lack of talent inside her organization. You know, the lack of talent management, the lack of being able to hire the right people initially will be the let's pay them more. But I think eventually it's going to come down to we need to train and get out to the areas where there are no jobs still, which is definitely in some cases in middle America and other areas in Europe where they haven't felt an increase in jobs and opportunities, right?
Yeah, this is possibly the beginning of an amazing thing. I sure hope so. And what we're going to see is that the skills that are required to keep this going are not skills that anybody has. They're skills that people need to get. And so so we should see a flowering of operations like Degreed and PathGather that help create credentials in areas where credentials aren't possible. And some of the stuff that companies like Burning Glass are doing with skills analysis, it will start to really matter because jobs are going to start changing very rapidly as we're going to solve the problem by teaching people who are already working how to do things differently and training people who haven't been in the workforce in this way before how to be at the front end of things. So it's going to get to be an exciting time. Lots of growth possibilities.
Yep, definitely. And I think as a wrap up note, organizations that have leaders who don't quite understand how important their talent is, like Uber might have been, will probably end up struggling through some of this because we know Uber had to let go of its senior engineer because of supposedly some misinformation he shared when he was being hired from Google about being released because of sexual harassment cases. But on top of that, the CEO also had a very, I think, damaging video released by one of his drivers about his relationship, about a conversation they had. And that kind of branding, that kind of information is going to become really critical in a really shortened talent shortage environment, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to see Uber may be the first example of the public saying that it matters what the integrity of a company is. It actually matters what the integrity of a company is to the employees and that the employees have a vote in how the company operates. You know, this seems like the second story in the let's give them a roller coaster and frozen yogurt machines view of workforce management that we saw last week. And so maybe the Silicon Valley model is coming under question.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's happening.
That there are bubbles everywhere that could burst, or we could continue to ride. Although I will have to say that, for my personal opinion, I take Lyft these days. So it is definitely, some of this news has impacted me. I make, that was a decision I made a while back, just understanding how they hired people, they met people, right? How they treated people and how they paid people. So I think you're right. We do care as I think consumers these days, and we make some decisions based on that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. So, all right,
cool.
Well, John, I think we've run through our 30 minutes already, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Thanks for taking the time to do this, Stacey. It's always fun. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week. You've been listening to HR Tech Weekly, One Step Closer with Stacey Harris and John Sumser. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you the next time around. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, everyone.